Closing up in the next week and a half, or 2 weeks, I guess now, this series we've been doing on thriving relationships. And tonight, I feel like I'm really loud. Am I just really loud in this room tonight? Preach. I don't have to preach. I can just whisper. Okay. But what I'm going to do something tonight I don't think I've ever done, and that is I am going to be preaching from Time Magazine tonight. And this is the most amazing article because this article basically is reinforcing biblical principles. And I guarantee you that there's not too many born-again, on-fire people writing for Time Magazine. And so when I read this tonight, or when I'm talking to you about the principles that are outlined in this particular article entitled, How to Stay Married and Why. And this writer, Belinda Luscombe, I believe is the way she pronounces her name, gives us a ton of research-based credence to a good number of practices and attributes that combine what I would describe as patience, kindness, purposefulness, and persistence in their relationship to marriage. And you're going to be amazed. And whether you're married tonight, whether you're divorced, whether you've been married for a long time or a short time, whether you are single and plan to stay that way, I just want you to hear this because sometimes we wonder if science and real-world results match up to what our beliefs tell us should be. And I want to encourage you tonight that the data is very powerfully in line with what Scripture teaches. And there's a lot of benefits that God wants to give us from walking with Him and doing the right things. For a Christian, this article holds some very encouraging news. Most of the attributes in this article being found in good lifelong marriages describe behaviors that we as Christians should recognize as the fruits of the Spirit. The author subtitled her article with the following statement. Staying married is more challenging than ever, but new data says it's worth it. You don't hear that from secular people very often, and they throw away marriage. You know, that's no big deal. Marry whatever or whoever you want, and it doesn't matter. It's just a piece of paper. God says differently, and what He says actually causes real-world consequences. And so we're going to see that tonight. It's pretty cool. This is not a world-shaking statement to those of us who are believers, but in a world that does not hold Christian values in high esteem, this sentiment, drawn from their data, might raise more than a few eyebrows. Take this statement, for instance. New evidence keeps piling up that few things are as good for life, limb, and liquidity as staying married. Now, there's a lot of truth in that that doesn't appear on the surface. But life itself, we'll find out, is happiest amongst people that have been successfully married for a good long time. Limb here speaks of a person's health. There are absolutely statistics that show us that a healthy, happy marriage is extremely good for your health. And there's no question about the fact that one of the greatest destroyers of wealth in our nation and in our times is the divorce of marriage, divorce from marriage. And so when we talk about this tonight, I want you to know it's real stuff, and it's very, very important, and it's very, very encouraging, I think, for most of us that seem to think that marriages are going by the wayside. They're not. God is still honoring them, and it's still a powerful institution, the most powerful institution on the planet. Carl Pilmer, a Cornell University gerontologist, that's the one that studies old guys like me, did an intensive survey of 700 elderly people for his book, 30 Lessons for Loving. His research revealed, as he writes, everybody, 100%, said that the long marriage was the best thing in their lives. 700 people. Not just 700 believers, who knows how many believers were in this, but 700 people out of the population pool, just a sample of people, were questioned intensely. And every one of them said that their long marriage was the best thing in their life. not a ball and chain, not a prison sentence, but the best thing in their life. So longevity in marriage has some really powerful rewards. But each respondent also said that marriage was hard. The alternative answer was that it's really, really hard. So there's got to be a tie here. It's the best thing, but it's hard. It's hard. Because we grow up, especially the younger we might be in this crowd tonight, we grow up kind of with the understanding that we're pretty much the center of the universe. That the world kind of does revolve around us. But when we get married, we have a rude awakening that it really doesn't. We try and make it happen that way, and it turns out being very, very selfish. And how many of you have found that selfishness in relationship is not really great? It doesn't grease the skids of good feelings. And it causes lots of problems and lots of conflict. And so what we see here is that these people who 100% of said, it's the best thing, is the best thing I've ever had in my whole life. And this 700 people would have had lots of different experiences, lots of different socioeconomic backgrounds, lots of financial blessings or difficulties. But all of these people said the very best. They didn't say childbirth. They didn't say, I don't know what's wrong with them. They didn't even say grandkids. They said marriage was the best thing that ever happened to them. So I want you to be encouraged. We have to fight for this. It may be really, really hard. I'm thinking of a couple in this congregation that for, I'll bet you, a good solid 10 years, maybe more, I counseled with them, we talked. I knew that every time I got a phone call was probably going to be the day they told me that they were going to get a divorce. It was just that kind of a family. It was just that kind of a difficulty. Some of the things that had happened, especially to the husband in his life, were horrendous. He was not set up for success in marriage. But you know what? They kept pecking away at it. They kept dealing with it. They kept putting up with all the issues and forgiving each other from time to time and coming and talking. And then pretty soon I didn't get calls anymore. And I don't know what happened, but somewhere along the way, things started to sync up. And they began to work together, and they began to love each other more. And today, they are one of the most model couples that you would ever hope to find. But it took a long time. And it was some tough stuff, folks, I'm telling you. But and focus on the family. Did some research one time of all the people in all of their ministries around the country in counseling and so forth that had gone through counseling with them. And they found out if people in dire straits can make it at least 8 years, if they can go through 8 years, that they will make it. 9 times out of 10, it was a very, very high percentage of people could make it. And so a lot of folks think, well, we're going through problems, so that just must mean we're not meant for each other. Hello? You're not going to ever find anybody that's going to agree with you totally. And if they do, one of you's not necessary. So just please understand that. And so don't be shocked when you don't always get along about everything. Don't be shocked when somebody, wants to roll the toothpaste from end back toward the opening and somebody just wants to smash it in the middle. It's going to happen. You know, let's hope it's only that, okay? But you got to understand that your normal is not somebody else's normal. And so when things are happening in your world, just remember these statistics that I'm telling you tonight. It is a huge thing to understand that tenacity and persistence and faithfulness are big when it comes to dealing with really, really hard, really, really difficult. And so many people give up when it just doesn't feel right, when I'm not just having that same hormone buzz that I used to have. And I'm just saying, that's pretty normal. In a world steeped with expectations of instant gratification, it's ever more important for believers to grasp the implications of sowing and reaping and denying oneself and patience. in relationship to marriage. It's not easy. But these principles that Jesus gave us are on display here in these statistics. Sowing and reaping. You know, the thing of it is that you may sow in tears in order to reap in joy. You may sow with no instant understanding that it's really working. You may show honor when it's not really appropriate. In other words, hasn't been earned. And you don't know if it's ever going to help. But I'm just here to tell you, when you do the right thing over and over and over again, sooner or later it begins to crack the wall that you're up against. It's just amazing when you do things God's way, how it works out. And the culture that we're in today is very much instant gratification. It's got to feel good all the time. It's got to have fun all the time. We've got to be entertained all the time. And I don't know about you, but I haven't found it very easy to maintain that. It doesn't seem like it just happens normally. The author herself drew a similar conclusion to what I just mentioned from the scriptures. She said this, in an era when it's both harder and less necessary to stay together, in other words, there's not the stigma approach or attached to divorce that there used to be, in an era where it's both harder and less necessary to stay together, the trick is figuring out how to go the distance so you can reap the surprisingly rich rewards. And that was based on the research, not based on a moral compass. It was based on the research that they'd seen in studying all of these different people that do the research and do the counseling on a mass level. Another author I don't recognize, but someone who obviously has spent countless hours dealing with the issues of people and their relationships, dropped this nugget. In the early years, you fight because you don't understand each other. In the later years, you fight because you do. Yeah. And have you noticed that the same fights come up? That you can already anticipate where the hot spots are going to be? When you're young, you trip over those landmines and you don't know where it came from, but after a while, you realize this is just who they are. You know, it's not a surprise anymore, and you fight because you don't like who they are or what they make you feel like or whatever the thing might be. But I think it's important that we understand that there's going to be fights about things through our marriages and through our lives together with people we're close to, whether it's a business associate, somebody at church even, or somebody we're married to. Following along the same lines, a man by the name of Tim Dowling writes, being married is like sharing a basement with a fellow hostage. I bet he didn't say that to his wife. What do you bet? Said, after 5 years, there are very few off-putting things you don't know about the other. After 10, there are none. This is when memories of romantic, hormone-induced days of the infatuation often cause couples to drift apart, thinking that they don't really love each other anymore. Emotionally, they may begin to try and recapture those naive and wonderful days. Maybe they may try all kinds of things to get back there. Some efforts along these lines can actually enhance and mature a relationship, as we've heard during this series. Honoring one another, concentrating on showing appreciation for the good traits our mate has, dating each other again, hitting the delete button on some of our behaviors that bother our mate, just to name a few, can reignite some of those old feelings again. However, there are some options on the negative side of the ledger of responses that when our passion for our mate begins to burn low that need to be avoided at all costs. Filling the void left by an anemic relationship has grown increasingly easy. Fantasy in numerous forms can begin to reinforce the walls between couples in stagnation. Pornography, romantic books and movies, and even the wistful belief of a soulmate out there just waiting to be discovered can be an enticement. Gary Chapman, the author of probably one of the most popular marriage books in the world and one of the most prolific and well-known marriage counselors, wrote the book Love Languages. He categorically states that we must drop the idea of finding a soulmate. We have this mythological idea that we'll find a soulmate and we'll have these euphoric feelings forever. That's just not going to happen. When you meet Mr. Wonderful or Miss Wonderful, it's going to feel like that for a while, and then you're going to find out, not so much. You know, in fact, the facts are, according to what they've learned statistically, soulmates tend to be crafted, not found. One documented study revealed that long married couples were almost always holders of the idea that divorce is not an option. One counselor observed that in his practice or in his experience that soulmates were made through, as they put it, practice, practice, practice. You know, whether it's friendship, whether it's a business partnership, whether it's in a church, we don't just automatically fall into a good relationship. There's got to be some practice. There's got to be some headbutting. There's got to be some learning each other. There's got to be some respect. There's got to be some concern for the well-being of the other person. There's got to be a lot of stuff in there before we really sync up. And you know, the more we invest in a relationship, the more we invest in each other, the closer we become, if that's our intent. Sometimes when we get close, we get critical. And critical doesn't help. And we may see some stuff, and as a believer, our approach shouldn't always be to be a forensic expert in what's wrong with our mate or our partner or our friend. Our job should be to ask the Lord, what beautiful thing is there that I can build into, that I can encourage, that I can just appreciate about that person. It's amazing when we start to look for the things that we appreciate about folks, how much we love them. It's amazing how sometimes from a distance you can look at a person, I don't like that person. Kind of like my grandson with vegetables. He hadn't tried it yet, but he didn't like it. And every so often we'll get him to try a certain thing and he said, I like that. Well, I have found that to be true with people, because a lot of times we look at the outward appearance of folks, their smile or the lack of a smile, their personality looks to us to be kind of boring or whatever, and then we get around that person, they're like the life of the party or whatever. We find that there's a whole lot more inside there than really we see on the surface, and maybe they're a little bit introverted. Maybe they've been hurt. Who knows what the reason for the way people are outwardly sometimes, but it takes an investment to get into that life and find out what's there. You know, it's hard to imagine sometimes, but every single solitary human being was created in the image of God. There's a piece of God's nature there. And that nature can grow. That nature, that piece of God's heart can become a dominant thing in their life if it's encouraged. Have you noticed that the behavior that you encourage or appreciate gets repeated? Huh? That's one of the greatest things to understand about life, whether you're on the receiving end or the giving end. If you want more of a thing, encourage that. Show appreciation for that. Compliment that. That's awesome what you're doing there. That's fantastic. Thank you. You know, that person's got to do their dead level best to be a pleaser and do that again, because it feels good to be rewarded with appreciation. And that works whether at home or at work or at church or any place else. Wherever people hang out, that kind of thing is going to be helpful for building relationships. And so it's so important that we get that understanding that we have to practice or we have to nurture relationships that we're in until they become precious to us. That's just the way that I've watched it over almost 40 years in church work, that the people that come to church and just spectate find everything's wrong. They move from place to place. Bless me if you can, kind of mentality. But the folks that dive in and give of themselves and invest themselves in something, could be little, could be big, whatever the case is, but they're doing with what's inside of them, the ability to give out and be received is powerful. And suddenly, they have a buy-in in the relationship. I'm going to promise you this. If you're in a relationship of any kind, and it's all, what do you got? Bring it. What can you do for me? What have you done for me lately? You're going to have a hard time. You're going to be in and out of relationships all the time. Because people aren't just standing around looking to be your benefactor. But when we invest ourselves, it's amazing. You reap what you have sown in relationships, financially, every other way. It's a kingdom principle. And as practitioners of the kingdom of God, you got to know that when you do that by faith, God is going to make sure that he will give back, shaken together, pressed down, and running over into your life. You cannot outgive God. And if we practice that same kind of mentality in the relationships that the Lord puts in our life, you're going to be amazed at how important they become to you and how much they fit and how you may feel like you found that soulmate in your marriage or that partner, that brother from another mother kind of thing. You know, it's important, and it happens that way when we do what God has said. I love the way this was put. He went on to say that a long, successful marriage carried a mindset that he described this way. This is precious. He says, they regarded their partnership as less like buying a new car and more like learning to drive. Huh? A lot of us are looking for the perfect person. Perfect, and they only made one of them. So you're not going to find them. But we're looking for that person that meets all my needs. And, you know, how many, I'm not going to ask you for a show of hands, but just kind of nod at me if you can. How many of you put your list down for that ideal person? Huh? How'd that work for you? Huh? Maybe it worked great. I don't know. I'm doing research here, but how'd that work for you? Did you get the whole list? Or did you get so far down the list that you just blew out the rest of the list? You're not going to get that menu of things that you thought you were going to get. And maybe you do, but the bottom line is you're going to find some other stuff that you didn't look for that wasn't on your list. And so it's just really important that we kind of look at life realistically. But I love this thought, more like learning to drive. And I remember, just probably like you do, the fear, the thought that how am I going to think about all these things at once when I'm taking my driver's test? You know, I wonder if that instructor that's with me even wants me to pass this test. You know, you try and remember, you know, how you're supposed to parallel park. That's a real crowd pleaser in the driver's test. I know that. And people are cramming for this test, and they're trying to get it all right, but sure as the world, something's going to blow up in your face, and you're going to have to take the test again or whatever. But learning to drive is a process. Being comfortable with the process is another thing, too. It just takes time, takes a few mistakes, takes a few close calls. Maybe, you know, I think our daughter hit everything in the driveway in the first 3 months that she was driving. I swear, the garage door, the wall, everything got hit. And it just seemed to be the way it was. But is there anybody here that said, yeah, I've had relationships like that? I thought I had it. I thought I had it wired. I had it figured out. I had everything I needed. I found the person. And then, wow, you know, I'm banging into everything. I'm not, you know, it's not working like I thought it would. And we just have to understand. We got to pace ourselves and we got to be in it for the long haul. Just do not expect. Do not expect for perfection right away. In fact, don't even expect it at all. Can I just be real? It's not going to happen. The loneliness of a stale relationship or one misguided by the soulmate syndrome, reaching out into a society to fill the void, is a distinct danger. Why am I talking like this? Why am I talking about these downsides of relationships? Well, because they exist. And if we have bought into the idea that I'm gonna fall into a marriage, it's just going to be awesome, or a relationship at work is going to be so awesome, it's the perfect one, or it's God's will. Okay. God's will for your life doesn't always go great. Peaks and valleys. Trust me on this. And we learn more in the valleys than we do on the peaks. There's timing. There are issues God is working out. I shared one on Sunday in one of the services, the scripture that I learned the hard way in church life. 1 Corinthians 11:19, it says, there must needs be disputes among you so that those who are approved may be revealed. Disagreement is one of those things that brings a relationship to a crucible point. We either say, I'm out of here, or we say, well, let's work through this. Let me make sure I'm hearing what you're saying. And it gives us an opportunity to validate one another. It gives us an opportunity to hear a person out and maybe to see ourselves through their eyes. It gives us an opportunity to find out things about situations we don't know that others might know. I'd like to think I'm the smartest guy in the room, but I found out early on that that's not even close. And being around other people, iron sharpens iron. You get the experience of their lives, plus the experience you have, plus the scriptures. You have all kinds of things to help buttress our ignorance if we will take advantage of them. If we're looking for people to always agree with us, we're going to be in a very, 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 very lonely life. And so we have to learn to go through the process of talking, hearing people out, and going through the relationship-building scenarios and learning to drive. But if we, in that lonely, stale place where we're talking to ourselves and saying, this is just not what I signed up for, this is not what I hoped it would be, and we think, you know, there's got to be somebody out there for me. There's got to be a soulmate out there for me. And it sounds so good. And people, hundreds of thousands of people tonight are online shopping themselves, looking for that person, looking to fill that void that God has ways of filling. But it's so easy for us to reach out there and do that, searching online for an old flame, putting ourselves out there on dating sites, playing with fire, folks. The Time article points out three significant essentials seen in successful long-term marriages. And again, I apply this to relationships all over. Number one, relationships between individuals with similar values and backgrounds are a real positive. It may be exotic to find somebody that has a total different culture than you do, and sometimes that works out, but it comes with many attendant problems. The best you can possibly do is to find some sinking of values and experience in the person that you're wanting to be with. Whether it's a business partner, you want to make sure that their business morals are similar to yours. You want to make sure that there's a trust capability there. You understand where they're coming from. You know, in some cultures, let me give you an example. My dad, back after he retired from corporate life, went and served in the Peace Corps. And he was the Associate Peace Corps Director in the Fiji Islands. And he worked with Fijian people and Indian people and some Chinese people as well. And he said it was the most interesting thing. He said, I absolutely loved the Indian people. He said, I worked with them on a daily basis. But he says, one of the things I could never get used to was the mentality that ruled their thought processes. And it was this. If you could cheat someone else out of something, it wasn't really a negative virtue. And they would refer to you as a very clever person. They wouldn't call you a liar. They wouldn't call you a thief because they absolutely adored that ability to overwhelm another person in a dealing or tell a story and get by with something. He couldn't believe it because otherwise they were a very moral people, but this one thing ruled their business. So, you know, that's a good example of what I'm talking about. If you're a believer and you get into a situation like that, you have an immediate conflict that's just basically a deal breaker. And we find that a lot of times. A lot of people get married because they are attracted to each other emotionally or physically or whatever, and they find out after that, man, this person really isn't even committed to a marriage. They're committed to relationships. Now, it's really hard to put something like that right when somebody has no concept of married for life. It's just married till the next best thing comes along. That's not going to work. And so it's really, really important that we take the time to figure out who we're dealing with and make sure that we have similar kinds of understandings of values in life. And that's a big, big plus. Second thing here is that relationships between individuals, this again is Time Magazine telling us what the statistics show, relationships between individuals who are devout, that means Christian or their faith is important to them, as opposed to those to whom faith is not a big deal. The marriages where both individuals were serving God at the same kind of level or passion were much more successful than those amongst people who had no faith at all, or to them it wasn't important. Number three, one constant was that at all costs, and this is a big one, couples avoided contempt. The author explains contempt in the context that therapists are identifying it here, that contempt it's more than just making derogatory remarks about the desirability of your mate or their earning power or some such thing, which, by the way, that is poison. One of the things we find out in marriages that are chronically going down the wrong road, or relationships that in general that are going down the wrong road, is that people are talking about their partners to other people, bad-mouthing them all over the place. And your heart begins to feed on that. And the more you tell it, sometimes the better you feel about having told it. But it doesn't help. In fact, it sets up a chronic infection in that relationship that's hard to get rid of, because respect amongst partners in relationships of any kind is absolutely critical and foundational. And when it is lost, it is very, very hard to regain. And we have to give each other some slack so that can happen. We call it forgiveness. It's really quiet in here. It's really hard to put that back together again when somebody is bad-mouthing, but that's not even the contempt we're talking about here. This is really interesting to me. Contempt in this particular context also includes the component of constant interruption, dismissal of their concerns, or withdrawal from conversation. We might call that the silent treatment. We might call that speaking over somebody. In other words, if you're in a relationship and every time you start to share your thoughts, values, or concerns, whatever it might be, somebody's talking over you and dismissing your thoughts, and you don't have a word to say in that thing, you have to be silent and just put up with it. It's an emotional abuse, number one. But number two, it's debasing that individual to a point that really you can't hardly have a relationship or a discussion. And it so often happens in the heat of the moment, and we have to just really catch ourselves when that's going on, because it's so easy to go there. And you know, have you learned what I've learned, that it's easy to let something fly out of your mouth, but it's hard to get it back? I wish the Lord had put a retrieval device on words, but it doesn't happen. The other thing is withdrawal from conversation. That's the kind of contempt that just shuts people down and makes restoration or reconciliation a very, very difficult thing. The essential analysis on the issue by all the leaders that talked about this was that contempt sets off a lethal chain reaction. It kills vulnerability, among other things. Vulnerability is the prerequisite for intimacy. That transparency between people that helps them to get to know each other and feel comfortable with each other. And this contempt issue makes it almost impossible. It is the prerequisite to intimacy. Without intimacy, commitment is a grind. And without commitment, the whole enterprise goes pear-shaped, which, of course, is a phrase for goes downhill or goes into some kind of state where it's hard to retrieve. We've always heard that familiarity breeds contempt. And in the close confines of marriage, it will be hard to avoid. Gary Chapman, again, in his great book, The Five Love Languages, points out three antidotes that we might want to adopt. Number one, you might want to try and figure out what makes your partner feel loved. He says it's likely to be one of these five things: words, kind words, encouraging words, time, just spending time, kind acts, sex, gifts. There are things that just really talk to the personalities and the heart of your mate or your friends or whatever you're dealing with here. And it's good to know that these are examples of things that you might want to try and research out. What is it that touches my friend? I've got friends that if you just say a good word to them, it's like you gave them $1 million. People in that you work with, you know, can be encouraged so well by that. Sometimes words are cheap to people. If they've grown up in a family where there was a lot of words thrown around, but no real actions or no real verification of the feelings or values that expressed by the words, then words don't mean much to them. And then it might be a gift. It might be spending time. There's hardly any substitute for time. One of the most valuable things you can give anybody is time. Of course, kind actions towards somebody, sex in the proper place is a powerful bond, and gifts. The second thing he said is learn to apologize properly and to forgive. He points out that disagreements are inevitable and they are healthy. So learning to fight fair is essential. Then he says that resentment is one of contempt's main co-conspirators. Wow. You know, most of the time in our relationships, we can easily fall prey to the poison of resentments. Bitterness is usually the result of that, and we have a bitter spirit about us. We become cynical. And I don't know where it came from, but it's one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard, is that bitterness erodes its container. It's like acid. It just eats you up. I'm just here to say you cannot afford, I don't care what the relationship is, you cannot afford bitterness. Resentment, bitterness, that kind of a thing will eat you up from the inside, and it will almost assure you that your relationships will have a very, very difficult time growing and being comfortable. So it's hugely important that we do that, that we watch for that. The third thing here was to find shared interests. This can help offset the changes that relationships go through as we age, or as we go through all the different phases of married life or relational life and the social context. Beyond the obvious benefits of a healthy relationship found in a long marriage, this article also cited numerous statistics of additional benefits to physical and financial health. The following quote tells the gist of it. For those who can stay the course, indicators that a long marriage is worth the slog continue to mount. Studies suggest that married people have better health, wealth, and even better sex lives than singles and will probably die happier. Most scholars agree that beneficial health effects are robust. They're huge. Happily married people are less likely to have strokes, heart disease, or depression, and they respond better to stress, and they heal more quickly. That's huge. That is huge. And this is the byproduct. A relationship that's good is just good. But on top of that, as you're sowing into that thing, you are going to reap physical consequences as well. Not to mention that you're probably going to do better financially than your counterparts who just give up on their relationships. It's just that way. Divorce is extremely expensive. It's the biggest debt creator in the nation. Or wealth stealer, I should say. One final piece of research that I found interesting came from John Gottman, who is known to be one of the top marriage researchers and educators, that shows that older married couples tend to behave like younger married couples, both inside and outside the bedroom. He also made the following observation. The surprising thing is that the longer people are together, the more a sense of kindness returns. Our research is starting to reveal that later in life, your relationship becomes very much like it was during courtship. Isn't that amazing? You see these folks that are just sitting on the couch or sitting on the swing or whatever they're doing at 90 years of age holding hands. I remember the last statement that George W. Bush made about his dad is all he wanted to do was hold mom's hand. I guarantee you. When he's 45 or 50 and, you know, running with his hair on fire, that wasn't going on much. But as they got older, the value and the sweetness of that thing just began to mount up until that was really the main thing he wanted to do. You know, I hope what I was trying to do with this tonight, I know it was a lot of reading and a lot of statistics, and I didn't quote one scripture. Well, I guess I did, but the truth of the matter is I wanted you to see that what God said in his word is being proved out by those professionals that deal with this stuff in mass, in the macro picture. Sometimes in our micro moment, in our own personal situation, we don't always see it happening right away, and we give up because we feel stuff. But I'm here to tell you that the statistics are proving it out, that God knows what he's talking about. And it applies in our relationships with our kids. It applies with our relationships with our business partners. It applies with our friends. And it certainly applies in our marriages. So I hope, you know, I put all these notes in a form that they could be retrieved by you and studied by you. And if it helps, please do so. And just please know that whatever you invest, according to the will of God, we'll come back to you in blessing after blessing after blessing. Would you rise to your feet? We'll pray.